I suggest you shut up and show more football.
Come on, come on. Pick it. We've done that thing. Can we not knock it?
I am flabbergasted. I wouldn't even let him on the bus after the match. I get a taxi back to Manchester.
Again, please don't call me arrogant, because what I'm saying is true. I think I'm a special one.
When the seagulls follow the troll, it's because they think sardines will be thrown into the sea. Thank you.
Understand what I'm trying to get at. Yes, he was a great player. Yes, he was a wonderful leader. But he wasn't a magician.
I'll take him out, son. I mean that. Take him.
Welcome and congratulations.
Thank you. What for?
Not you.
Oh, sorry.
If you've just found us.
Oh,
this
right,
is
right.
The Keys and Gray podcast. Fittingly, with myself, Richard Keys.
Yes, and me, Andy Gray.
Yes. It's great to have you. If you are a new listener, subscribe, please leave us a review. 5 stars, preferable, if you can. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram as well, at Keys and Gray Pod. Keys and A-N-D, Gray Pod. There are no shortcuts. Keys and Gray Pod. And it's nice to have your company. Our guest today, I'm really looking forward to talking
with.
It's been a little while since we last did. He's been managing of late in the Northwest.
Uh-huh.
Probably not a character that any of us thought would ever turn his hand to coaching or management.
No.
But I would say did so successfully.
Yeah. Yes.
Before it came to a sudden halt recently.
That's maybe the clue.
Joseph Anthony Barton.
Yes.
A whole host of different things this week. And what I enjoy most about this podcast, Andy, is never in any particular order. And I've no idea until I scroll through back the iPad on what I've said this week.
Spare a thought for me then, anyone who's listening, because if he hasn't got a clue, think how I feel sitting across.
Well, that's absolutely right.
Not knowing what's getting thrown here.
Well, I want to start on a serious note, and that is to send our best wishes to Sol Bamba in his fight against cancer, diagnosed this past week. I sent a message via a friend of ours.
Yes.
Spent time with him over here in Qatar. Really, really nice guy. And bad news, the diagnosis, but anyone that's played for Cardiff can probably overcome
most things in life. If Warnock's been part of your life and you've survived Neil Warnock, come on, Sol, you can do it.
So good luck to you. We didn't mention here the numerous penalties that Manchester United have been given since the beginning of last season. Mm-hmm. 34. We did on beIN Sports, and I have tweeted at different times to some fairly aggressive responses to Manchester United.
Did you expect anything other than that? No, of course not.
But the purpose was, and this is where I'm chuffed a bit, because I wanted them to pick up on it in order to give it oxygen and start everybody else talking about it. And since I mentioned it, Andy, nobody has given Manchester United a penalty. And here today, back page of the Daily Mirror, Marcus Rashford, Jose taught us the secret of how to win more pens.
I saw that today. And I'm honestly, maybe I shouldn't have had, but I did have a chuckle. Because if anyone was going to teach them how to win a pen, it would have been Jose. When you think back to his Porto days when he was... You know, when he took that team to the final against Celtic, they were diving here, diving there, winning free kicks here, winning this here.
And bollocking John Terry for telling Drogba stop falling over because you're embarrassing us. And Jose said, no, you carry on.
That's part of it.
Because it's driving them mad.
Yeah. It's no surprise to hear that.
Ruud Gullit, I always refer to as the final arbiter on this. Mm-hmm. He talks about, in Italy, performance is everything. Mm-hmm. And football is art. Mm-hmm. It is the home of opera and drama. And if you win a penalty in Italy, you are congratulated.
Yes, you
not
are.
Just by your teammates, but by all and sundry, everybody. it's something to be proud of. But we still don't operate like that in this country. I understand that if you've always talked about it, a leg's left dangling, you've got every right. I get all of that. Mm-hmm. But Mark Clattenburg this week, I saw a piece in the Daily Mail, and he's looked back on the last 11.
I saw that.
And he said 5 of them, absolutely not.
I know.
And that's my point, that it was just becoming a habit to buy into what Rashford himself was doing, and Martial particularly. Uh-huh. I mean, Fernandez anyway, you've just got to sneeze on him and he goes over.
He's only won two.
Without penalties this year, the Premier League looks different. Manchester City, Liverpool, United third.
Okay.
But it was, for me, it was it was statistically impossible, and it was becoming, it wasn't funny anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
It was every week.
Do you know, but it is the modern game, Richard, in respect to it. I feel a bit sorry for referees sometimes. And nowadays, there's a situation that's happening outside the box, and there's a brush of somebody. And they'll probably stay on their feet 9 times out of 10 because they've got the football and they're advancing towards the goal. The same, I was going to say collision, the same incident happens inside a penalty area. You can bet 9 out of 10 times, instead of staying on their feet, they're going to ground. As soon as the first touch, first brush, go looking for it, put a leg out in their leg to catch your leg. All that, I think, is a bit unpalatable. I've always said the thing about defending is if someone sticks a leg across you, you're not, and nothing in the laws of the game that say you have to jump over it. You're entitled to fall over it and get yourself a penalty because that's just the defender being stupid or taking a risk that maybe he shouldn't. That's different from what we've seen.
Sol Campbell, Wayne Rooney, Old Trafford all those years ago when the Invincibles run was finally ended. And there was a huge debate over what Rooney had done, and Rooney did.
Sol went across his run. I remember it, he did. Sol went across it. Wayne tried to hurdle it and fell. Remember?
No, I saw Rooney fall over.
No. Well, but Sol shouldn't have put his leg across him.
Well, for goodness sake. Anyway, it was happening too often for me. And I think there's been a little bit of balance brought back to it. And I hear what you're saying. But when I'm thinking of the Greenwood pen when he charged into the lad, you know, West Brom when they had a pen and it was overturned and then a perfectly good save was deemed illegal. I mean, it was daft. I think now this weekend, depends when you're listening to this. We're recording Friday morning. They play Sunday the big two, don't they?
Yeah. That'll be interesting.
It will be interesting
because those are probably the two teams who have. Steady. I know they say that. That Liverpool haven't had as many, but, you know, I think they've got one or two who are prone to... I think Mark Clattenburg mentioned it in his article, didn't he? He said about Liverpool, be careful. He says, you've got one or two of your own, Jurgen, that are not against falling down in the penalty area.
Yeah, well, that would be right. Mm. Although in 5.5 years, the 33 that Manchester United have had from the start of last season far outweighs what Klopp's been given.
Yeah, I know.
Debate goes on as to whether we should stop or not. I, this time round, hope that we continue to play. I fear that we might not if players continue to behave in the way that they have been on and off the pitch.
I agree with you off the pitch. I agree with half of that. Off the pitch, yes. I think that there's no excuses. The guys know what's required of them. Everyone's looking at them. But, you know, I've been reading a lot this week about the celebrations and there's a mixed bag about who are for and who are against. And I think it's wrong to blame players' celebrations on the fact that football might be told to wrap up for the season because your players are celebrating a goal.
I would counter that argument.
I know you would.
You answer this question, honestly. Yeah. Is there anything better than the feeling of scoring a goal?
No, nothing.
Now, that's an answer that got you into trouble once, isn't it?
It did, very much so, yes.
Do you want to explain?
I did, maybe in my youth, I did happen to mention that I actually felt that scoring a goal was better than sex.
Yeah.
And I did say that. I qualified it by saying, the thing is, I could only score a goal probably until I'm 33.
Yes.
But I'd like to think the other part of that statement, I could carry on for quite some time after that.
And your partner at the time wasn't too impressed, was she?
No, not best pleased. No.
Well, I can understand
not
why.
Not best pleased.
Did it work out like that? Did you carry on beyond 33?
Oh, well, I hope so.
You see, I think back to the days when goal celebrations were rehearsed.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then we saw them on the pitch. Ian Wright and Neil Ruddock, remember, famously.
Yeah. Klinsmann, when they told me to die.
Yes. And I know everybody went and jumped on top of him, but corner flags. You know, Cahill made punching. So I understand. I get it. The rush of adrenaline and the euphoria and the moment, and you're missing a crowd anyway. And it is what we watch football to see, goals. I've said that constantly. But I think we need to be really, really careful. Particularly, it was exacerbated last week by Chorley post-match. No need for that.
What?
The dressing room scenes and the songs and the arrivals at Marine. I mean, I noticed Merseyside police said no social distancing regulations were broken. Yes, they were. Of course they were.
Why?
Well, because everybody was in the street arm on shoulder.
Oh, the fans?
Yes.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Of course they were broken.
That's not footballers, Richard. That's not footballers celebrating. That's
football.
What do you want to do? You can't say then, we're going to ban it then because you footballers are causing this.
I think that
there is more good coming out of mental health by football being played in the UK than there would be if they stopped football players are celebrating. Now, listen, I don't know if there's a clinical reason to. Let me tell you this. If somebody scores a last-minute winner at Anfield this weekend, are you going to tell me they won't be celebrating?
No, I understand, but I think...
And what's the danger there?
The danger of that happening?
No, what's the danger of 15 seconds of celebration?
Well, the danger
15,
is that...
10, maybe.
I know that we get tested twice, or the
they
players
do.
Get tested twice.
Three
but
times,
you can be asymptomatic an hour after a test and not know that you're a carrier.
I know.
So there are dangers, and I think the danger is that you're rubbing people's noses in the problems that they've got locked down.
I don't think you are.
We're okay because we're rich and famous.
No, I don't think that. That's wrong. I don't think players think that.
Piers Morgan.
Give me Piers Morgan all you like. I don't care.
Here is an example of the rich and the famous. He's been beating people up, as we know, morning, noon and night, and then clears off to Antigua for Christmas.
Well, I know, but that's not football.
It's not, but it's on the pitch, Richard.
The
general public look at that and they go, oh, well, if you've got a few quid, you think you're better than us.
No, I don't think.
But you're not.
Yes, off the field, I would agree with you. They might have that perception of certain footballers. Yes, and this Christmas and New Year, it's been justified because of the headlines one or two have created. I get that. But on the football pitch itself, you know, it's already sterile enough. Game, yeah, you don't like it. It's already sterile enough.
What we're getting now, I have come to understand. I didn't want to play on last year. I was genuinely fearful. But I think everybody did a really good job in getting us going. I'm still of the opinion, had we stopped, we could have started again this time around in August in our own time without the rush and the concerns now about finishing again. But anyway, that's history. I'm pleased we're playing this time around.
Do you know what worries me as well? Worries me again that these politicians, and I don't even know their name. That's how quite
Oliver Dowden is the culture
whoever
secretary.
It is, yeah. Whoever it is, that they're just trying to make another headline for themselves off the back of sport, off the back of football. And football has taken a kick in and justified in some cases. But I guarantee you, of all the Premier League footballers that do get paid huge sums of money, more of them do a lot more good than bad, I tell you. And you only have to throw up Marcus Rashford's name as an example of the good that footballers, with all the money and all the fame have, that can do.
And I'm sure that we've all seen the alleged pay packet of Raheem Sterling on social media. Although he's earning a lot of money, have a look at the tax column.
Yeah, I know. I saw that as well. Exactly. So why are these politicians trying to give football a kick in again and saying, where can I a celebration on a football pitch? And it's not an insult to the NHS. I don't think it is. I don't think it's rubbing the NHS noses in the ground and saying, well, sod you. I don't think footballers are thinking that at all. Mm. Because most people who are in the NHS have a football team they love and support and will be just as pleased to be able to watch them. I just think politicians get busy because they're getting a kicking, and sometimes usually justifiably are getting a kicking because they've made a complete arse of it. And I just think that, oh, football, that's popular. Let's just have a whack at that and we'll maybe get... No, sorry. Yes, I mean, look, is it Danny Ings this week?
Yes.
Danny? They think Danny might have gone onto a football pitch, as you say, asymptomatic, right? Now he's had to quarantine. He'll miss the next couple of games, right? But everyone's tested since then. Nothing. Not one other Southampton player on that pitch or opponent has tested negative.
Let me run something else past you. I turned to the Daily Mail female column makes me laugh often online. I mean, the Daily Mail, who I've said
you
this
like the Daily Mail, don't you?
Well, they want to preach to us all the time, don't they, about standards and how to live your life. And yet, you know, it makes me smile when I see the columns where they have, you know, I mean, Pesca Solido, Karen Brady's girl, stripped to her bikini, magnificent curves and all this. I mean, it's soft porn half the time. This is the stuff that they condemn in The Sun. But anyway, from the female column this week, how do you look so pitch perfect, lads? Premier League footballers appear very well groomed despite salons being closed during lockdown, as expert claims elaborate styles would be impossible to do at home. This will become a story. This will become a story. Because they're right. These guys, they must be, see, they're talking about the fade. Uh-huh. Right? The fade is from nothing through one, two, three to the top, a high top.
Is that what you're supposed to do?
Yeah.
I've just put mine at nothing all the way across.
An expert here has said that the fade is, you just can't do. Celebrity stylist. Let me find you his name. Celebrity stylist. He has said, yeah, even I can't do this at home, so I don't know where these boys are getting it done. James Johnson told Female, the elaborate styles on show in recent matches would be near impossible for a player to maintain at home with a razor and a box dye. At most, these footballers would be able to trim the top with the kitchen scissors, he says, and I'm sure many have done that. Many of us have done that in lockdown. But he's right. I mean, they are picture perfect, these boys, aren't they, when they take the pitch, when you think about it?
Well, as you say, part of being a high-profile footballer is having your entourage. Maybe they live in.
Yeah, I'm sure some
maybe
of them do.
Maybe they have a hairdresser who lives in.
I'm absolutely certain some of them do. Pogba's one. I think he's got a salon at home, hasn't he? But whether he employs his hairdresser full-time or not, I don't know. There were a couple of examples last year. Jordan Ibe was one pictured in a hairdressing salon. So
there's been a few.
Keep your eyes on it.
I saw an actress who got caught in a hairdressing salon and said she was in there because she was preparing for a role in a movie.
Yes, I saw that too.
So maybe the guys are preparing for a role every Saturday and Sunday.
Well, the way that
might be a story.
Back
by,
to
the way.
Our previous...
by the way, there you go. If people are looking for things, there's another thing you've given them. Definitely.
Going back to our previous conversation about buying a pen, there's a lot of acting involved in that, so I suppose you could argue that is the case. This I love, Tweet of the Week, Andy Dunn, Sunday Mirror, and this says a lot about the fella, just to get ourselves back on football, uh-huh, who I think's had a massive impact this year. Terrific guy. And
let me guess, hold on, keep going. Explain, don't give me his name, but keep telling me.
Moved in the summer, enormous impact, proper bloke. I said recently in Nigel de Jong's company, water carrier, and Nigel said, don't you ever dare say that in my company again. You're undermining the position I play in. This fella's a water carrier. Caught by Josh De Silva in a recent cup tie. Of course you didn't mean it, he says. So don't worry, I'm a Viking and I'm fine. But you owe me a new shin pad. You have a great future ahead at Josh De Silva. Be strong and keep working hard. Best of luck to you and your team. Big hug.
Josh De Silva
played against Pierre Emil Højbjerg.
Oh, Højbjerg. Oh, I'm a Viking. That threw me. I'm a Viking.
I mean, great. Good luck to him. I mean, many would have whinged and complained about that challenge for a long time. Højbjerg got up and said, yeah, look, there's the damage.
Yeah.
Cut shin. Move on.
Do you know who he reminded me of? Peter Reid. When he played Bayern Munich, Reedy had a sock that was just pure red. Wouldn't have been allowed near the pitch these days, but he had one white sock and one red sock. It was fantastic. Yeah, give me some cotton wool, shove it down my sock. That's got on with it.
Just before we join our guest, I understand the answer to the question is,
go on,
contracts have been signed. Broadcasters expect a product. But to continue the dangerous scenario in which we find ourselves with COVID, why are we trying to squeeze cup ties in of little significance and relevance? When our primary concern should surely be worrying about the Premier League.
I don't know.
And I know that sounds selfish, but
sorry, Richard, we keep saying these are different times. Okay, now we might get away with it, and we won't know for another, I'm guessing, 10 days or so, or another week, as to whether any of the games played by Premier League sides against lower league sides has added an impact on the amount of people that are found to be positive for coronavirus. We'll find that out in the next 7 to 10 days, I guess. But we don't know. But I didn't think it was a risk worth taking. When you talk about risk, that to me was a risk not worth taking for the greater good of keeping football. I think that, Andy.
You look at, and I mentioned this to you on beIN Sports the other night, and I think of the 18 teams that played prior to the Monday when West Ham won at Stockport, I think 312 changes between them had been made. Yeah. Top of that list, Aston Villa with 11.
Wow, that's right.
My point is, I don't think teams don't care anymore. Top of the Premier League, they're hunting Champions League places. Bottom of the Premier League, it's a desperate scrap to stay in. And when I say bottom, I mean the bottom 14.
Yeah.
Top 10 in the Championship, all think they can come up. Bottom 10, 12, 14 in the Championship.
Think they can go down.
I think they can go down. Yeah. Here's the evidence. Aston Villa, changes last week, 11. Derby, who are in the bottom 3 of the Championship, 11. Huddersfield, just outside looking to stay afloat, 11. Bournemouth, at the top of the Championship, 10. Luton, 9. Millwall, 8. Newcastle, 7. You go further down the list. Rotherham, 6. Preston, 5 changes. Now, some of these may have been enforced. Some of these may have been for injury. So this is a general look at what
if you
Oram Wood, 3.
If you looked at that every season, you'd find the same sort of stats. Not 11. You know, Villa's 11 were for reasons, obviously COVID reasons. That to me was I don't know why they played that game. I have to confess. Aston Villa against Liverpool.
Contractual requirement. But think about
it. Okay, then let me answer you this then, if you know about the technical contractual stuff. Having fulfilled the obligation to play the FA Cup tie against Liverpool with under 23 and under 21 players.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. It's a very good point.
Why then did Jose Mourinho and Tottenham have a justification of saying, hold on a minute, if you can fulfil that fixture with those players, why can't you fulfil the Premier League fixture?
I think you've got a very good point. The only thing I can think is that Mourinho will be saying to himself, what if, you know? So let's try and be a little more careful with our view on what's happening in the Premier
League.
Well, I'd like to think so. I think Premier League clubs are more aware of each other's problems. But talking of the FA Cup, people say to me, oh, well, award a Champions League place for winning it. What's the point?
No.
1980 was the last time a team out of the top league won the FA Cup. West Ham. In that time, only Wigan and Portsmouth have interrupted the success of the top six. They win it every year. So you're not incentivizing anybody by saying, here's a Champions League place.
No.
The top boys are going to win it anyway.
Yeah, they do.
And right now, I think it's in the way. And
I mean, surely may argue with us.
There will be teams of that nature but surely could become the epicenter now going forward.
That's what
with
I mean.
What happened there.
I mean, that's what we don't know for the next week.
Yeah.
That's what we don't know.
You know, we're cancelling Premier League games at the minute to make way for Shrewsbury to play a cup tie. I don't understand that. I don't understand that.
Well, you and me both.
So I think there's mileage in that as well going forward that we need to be aware of.
We shall see.
Wouldn't have bothered you haircuts, would it?
No, I've just said that. I'm on a zero all the way across.
Yeah, but when you played.
No, just a perm.
Straight perm.
Straight perm. So I wouldn't need a hairdresser.
No.
No.
And the perm was for style purposes, was it?
No, it was for style. It was for I had rubbish hair when I was young anyway, and probably part of the reason. And the thing was, I had to like blow dry it when I trained.
Of course. Yeah.
So if you're blow drying your hair,
well, that's terrible.
You know, it's just a mess. So somebody said to me, "Get it permed." They said, "And if you get it permed, you don't have to blow dry it. You just wash it and leave it."
Cunning.
And then I didn't realise
so
when I was washing, leaving it, I would actually wash and go at some time. And it has done.
So that had nothing then to do with the style at the time?
No, not in my view. No, certainly not. No, mine was not that I looked around and saw who would have been playing then.
Well, Liverpool. 1-11 had a perm.
Kevin, did he?
Well, apart
McDermott.
From Kenny. But Suey always argues his hair isn't.
It's naturally.
His hair is not naturally curly.
No, it's not.
Suey, Phil Neal, Tomo, Terry Mack. Alan Kennedy, all of them.
They did, but no. And when I think back to then, when I was at Villa, then I'm looking back. Who had a perm at Villa?
You.
Apart from me, that's what I'm saying. So there wasn't. So I just did it for convenience.
Yeah. See, I've always had this conversation with you. There is no time now. I think if you were playing now, you'd be fully tattooed.
No, I wouldn't.
Fully,
100%.
I think you'd 100%. No question.
No.
And
I can categorically say I'd be Harry Kane.
And
tattooless.
You'd be wearing the Larius boots that
were
available.
I wouldn't. Black and white.
No question.
No, you're talking about yourself.
Tats would be an issue, but boots I would be comfortable in. Yeah, I'd wear a pair of Larry boots.
You'd be pink booted up.
Yeah.
I'm looking across, you got a pink shirt on today. It's your colour.
Let's introduce our guest, who I think might have something to say on this subject.
Larry boots. Yeah.
So, Joey Barton, my friend.
Can I ask a first question?
Yes.
Right. I think we should start, when we get somebody like Joey in, who has such a great career, we should start with a highlight. I'd like to ask him about that.
His highlight?
Yes.
Oh, I wanted to go another route.
No. I want just quickly.
All right.
His highlight, how he felt the day he signed for Rangers.
That was about as good as it got for me, was there, then.
Oh dear. Well, now we've dealt with his highlight. You carry on.
We were just having a conversation, Joe, about important things on the football pitch in the modern era. And I said to Andy, we were talking haircuts, naturally. Yeah. And I said to Andy, were he playing now, he would definitely, definitely be fully tattooed
no
up.
Chance.
And he would have a pair of coloured boots.
Chance.
Do you subscribe to my view being correct?
No.
Of who? Of me?
Well, no, of Andy and what
player.
You know about
Andy
him.
Gray, I mean, now.
You watched him from the terraces, like me.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm not that old.
I was just going to say, he wasn't born. So if he watched me from the terraces, he would have been in a papoose.
Yeah. A what?
Yeah,
yeah, you like that. Yeah, you like that.
The great Everton side at that era, I just missed. I was born, but I obviously was told after tale and obviously watched VHS copies of them. But I don't think you'd have had the coloured boots and the tattoos. Certainly, you don't see that diving header anymore now. It's almost gone out of the game.
Well,
I think
Harry Kane just wound it back a couple of years, didn't he, the other night?
Oh, it was a beauty.
Yeah, but not at that level. That level of bravery that going in with muck and bullets to get hurt and get your head on the end of it. You don't really see that now from the modern day kind of player. The defenders would be sent off.
Yeah, were you a Larry Boot wearer, Joe?
In the end, I think it just captured everybody. You know, when people are giving you free stuff, or when people are paying you to wear stuff, as it got in art, you know, you don't when your kids off council estates like most of us are, you don't say no to a freebie.
No, that's fair.
And when they come in all the colours, it's either, well, you want to pay for your own black boots, or do you want to take them on for free? I think most of the lads just take the freebies.
Take the freebies.
What about tattoos?
Yeah,
body art.
It's become I mean, I always remember my granddad and that always having tattoos, but then, you know, they just got ridiculous, didn't they, on young footballers, and I just think that's just societal, you know, the way it goes. I don't think I'd have seen, you know, the likes of Andy Gray. I'd have been disappointed had he had the full body sleeves and all
arm sleeves.
I don't think it'd have looked as good on the old... on the old match of the day, you know.
Well, I thought you were going to say on the old man, because certainly, certainly by now it wouldn't have looked very good. I can tell you that. And you talked about bravery. Is it brave or is it stupid to the way that we used to play the game?
Here's the old point to that. But we've seen a lot of the, you know, obviously the dementia issues kind of rumbled on, and it looks like the PFA have started to make progress with that.
At last,
and you know, it's kind of what you don't know. You don't know at that time. I mean, you're looking. I think it was the big NFL kind of expose about the CTE and the problems you could have with head collisions that led us into the space we're in now. But again, I think if you get involved in sport, you know, you understand there's a risk you're going to get injured if you don't, you know, I've got two aluminium screws either side of me, fourth have had knee operations, you've had bumps and bruises over the time, and we played in an era of relatively non-contact compared to, you know, the games of yesteryear, where, you know, you'd seen your likes of your Tommy Smith, who wouldn't miss big games, and they were taking injections to play in those games with no idea of the long-term ramifications, because at the time, you know, the expert did not know what was going to go on. And, you know, I know myself, there's loads of games I probably shouldn't have played in because of injuries, but you were never missing them because, you know, you've trained your whole life to play in them games. So, you know, we understand what goes with it. And I think, you know, you understand you're going to have bumps and bruises. I've seen that the guy, Steve Thompson, I think the rugby guy, and I'm kind of looking at that going, you know, you play rugby and you pick a ball up and you run into someone who's 20 stone as fast as you can. Yeah. You do know that at the end, you know, after 10, 15, 20 year cycle of doing that on a week by week basis, you know, you're not probably going to be 100% in the health column. So at what point do you say, you know, you have to allow for, you know, wear and tear. If you play sports at the level that we want to play it, we get paid fantastically well. And I've seen these things about heading going out the game. I mean, you know, contact first to be out the game now. Heading goes out the game. I mean, how will we be able to compare, you know, the game of yesteryear to the game of today? It'll be a completely different sport.
Well, it'll just be five-a-side, Joey, on a big pitch.
Well, and you've got VAR and the I mean, at some point, you know, we've got to draw the line and say, look, do we want to play football or do we want to, you know, just sit and have a virtual
it's a good point.
Game of football on the VAR headset, you know, and I take the contact out of it completely. I mean, you know, we've got to understand that it is a contact sport. It is, you know, certainly when I grew up, you know, Goodison Park, a challenge in a 50-50 tackle was as good as in a cross or a chance of goal. You know, that did ignite a game sometimes.
Yes, which is what made Reedy a hero, I think. Were you a man, Joey, to get your revenge in first?
I always remember speaking to Terry McDermott about this, saying, like, you know, because you'd always ask about your Stewardesses and that, you know, your Jimmy Cases and the kind of hard players of yesteryear. And obviously, Terry Mac wasn't one of those. He was a guile and midfield goal scorer who could, you know, get in and score incredible goals. And his return for Liverpool was superb. So I always had a problem with that type of player. So me and Terry used to talk a lot about, you know, the kind of runs that type of player would make, because it was my job to try and take care of that player in the opposition side. And he always said about Jimmy Case, he'd say, you know, the way he did it, he said he could be tackled by somebody and he'd wait games and games and games before he got his revenge. And then he, you know, in the modern era, you just don't get that. You don't have, as I say, there's no physicality as such. You know, you look at an N'Golo Kante, who's, you know, a real physical kind of number four now. I mean, he probably wouldn't have lasted 5-10 minutes in the Graeme Souness, you know, Jimmy Casey either. You know, you look at it, even the Roy Keane, Patrick Vieira either, I'm not sure N'Golo Kante would have been able to make any kind of physicality.
I mean, you literally did make an impact from time to time. Uh-huh. Players did know that you were there.
Yeah, but did you go into a 50-50 or did you always make it 60-40 in your favour?
In my head, anyway, it was always 60-40. You know what I mean? You were just like, I just came from Liverpool, and it was like, I'm getting the ball. You know, my job. I wasn't blessed with an incredible amount of skill and talent. Everything I did under the kind of the hard work and, you know, being a good team player, doing the things that, you know, some of the more skillful players in the team wasn't their skill set. So, to get them on the ball, and I think, you know, you have to know your role in a team, and you have to understand that, you know, not everybody wants to be Lionel Messi, but not everybody can be Lionel Messi. And accepting that that's your role, and in different teams, you play a different role. And, you know, I wish I'd have been at the level to go in a Premier League game and pull the strings of it, you know, as you've seen, you know, an Eden Hazard, you're seeing, you know, a Mo Salah type do now, Mane type, but, you know, not everyone, not one of us have got that skill set. And it, as I say, you've got to find a way of, first and foremost, that, you know, getting yourself into a game. And I think, you know, for me, it was about, you know, physical running. I was always a good athlete. So kind of get someone in deep water physically, you know, getting into that 12, 13K range. So you've got to be fit to do that.
Yeah.
And then if you've got a technical, advantage, use it. And if you don't, which most of the time in the Premier League when you're playing against Roy Keane, Paul Scholes, Stevie Gerrard, Frank Lampard, you don't have, then you have to find another way of imposing yourself on them as people. And we were allowed with a bit more physical scope, and you could test someone's, you know, mental aspects, and that was the way the game was played when we played it. I'd have probably been better 10 years before, I'd have probably had a lot more license with referees. But you know, if I was playing now, I'd probably be sent off a lot more than what it is because of VAR.
I would have loved to have dropped a ball between yourself and Reedy.
Oh, that'd be
fine. And said, go on, win it. I mean,
we're both from the same part of Liverpool as well.
Well, exactly.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
and obviously, Stevie Gerrard from there. So there must be something. We always produce it. It's only about 30,000 people height, but it's got a great history of producing, which you get these little enclaves of hotbeds of football, you know, where lots of good players come through and end up. I mean, that's what people forget, I think. Sometimes just to get at that Premier League level or that first division, as it would have been in your day, Andy.
Yeah.
It's an incredible achievement. You know, you look back now and you think,
fantastic.
Wow,
yeah.
You know, people take it for granted, just playing in the big leagues. And, you know, I used to sit in school and think, if I could make one professional appearance in Division 4, Division 3, Division 2, Division 1, you know, that was a huge badge of honour as a young player trying to make, you know, your trade as a pro footballer.
Did you get everything out of your career, do you think, Joey?
No, I think you know, all the indiscretions certainly, you know, didn't help me and make a kind of move to a bigger, better club kind of unfold. I think if it had been more well-behaved off the park in the earlier days, I think that I might have got the opportunity to play with better players, which then allows you to, I think, move up the hierarchy of the game. You know, I never played as a European Cup, qualified for it with Marseille when I was out there, but never got a permanent move the next year and never played in it. I never went to a major tournament with my country. I never got capped more by England, which I would have obviously loved to have done. But then, you know, I had some good players ahead of me, you know, as I said before, you know, Scholes, Lampard, Gerrard, Michael Carrick. And to get one cap, I suppose some people will, you know, you always look back at it and you join in that training group and you kind of know where you are. And I knew I wouldn't start every week for England because of the talent of the players ahead of me. You know, there were some incredible midfield players, never mind just talent in that era. But also, you know, you look at like Colin Harvey, who I grew up kind of, you know, watching videos of the Holy Trinity, and he never got an England cap. And, you know, he's a lot better player than me. So, you know, Steve Bruce again won championships at Man United, never got a cap. So there's lots of good players. You know, Kev Nolan, a good mate of mine, probably should have got an England cap, never got one. So you have to look back and, you know, you get that England international status. And as my dad said, you know, they can never take that cap off you.
There's two things there, Joe. First of all, on Reedy, I always smile when I talk to Joe Royal, and he refers to the cultural ambassador of two dogs.
He's a hell of a player, really.
But if you hadn't been that angry young man, maybe you wouldn't have had the success that you did.
Yeah, I wouldn't have got off the playing pitches at Vighton, I don't think you'd have got out. I mean, it was rough and ready football, and you had to survive, you had to learn. I mean, I was fortunate in terms of my dad played for Knowsley United, so they were really, you know, decent amateur set up, and I was with them in a dressing room my dad wasn't allowed to go and play football unless I was taken on a Saturday morning because he had two younger brothers. So if he didn't take me, he couldn't go. Yeah. So I went the length and breadth of the non-league scene in this, you know, in England, and, you know, from the North, Harrogate and all the sides that have come through now into, you know, all the kind of Midland sides and lower league sides, you name it, I've been in a dressing room and I smelled football from a young age. So I was given a great sounding board to come in, and then obviously got into a professional space myself. And I always had them kind of non-league values and principles of, you know, good team, good camaraderie, take no kind of nonsense, we had a sign of Fleetwood, you know, no dickheads. And people who you'd go out and have a pint with, you know what I mean? You know, the old school values, which I think good teams are built off, whether you go from, you know, European Cup winners or, you know, third division winners. I think they all share common themes of good principles that run throughout a successful team at any level.
Listen, a number of times we've spoken, I've never asked you, I have read, and I don't know if it be true or otherwise, so I am going to now. When you got sent off against City, why did you kick Tevez?
Well, Carlos had punched me about it. That's what led to the whole incident. I'd checked, someone had taken a throw, and I'd picked him up off the throw just beforehand, and I'd kind of read where he was going to go and checked his run. And I think we were drawing 1-1 at the time, and they knew that Arsenal had gone. You know, they just got, no, you just look at another team and you can just see when players have gone sometimes. Yeah, and that's what's missed on the TV sometimes when you're in the muck and bullets of it. You can just smell that a player's not quite as composed as what they would normally be. And I think that afternoon at City, we really, you know, tapped into the fact that they were struggling to get over the line for the first title and the enormity of the task. Obviously, they'd got a bit of a fortunate start with the Zabaleta cross that went in. we pulled it back level and they started unraveling massively. And Tevez punched. I've not seen any replays back because if it had been me punching Carlos, it'd probably been replayed 58 times. But as it was
that's
Carlos
true.
Punching me, it doesn't fit the narrative. And then I should have took the Jimmy Case route and waited probably 2, 3, 4 games to get him back. But at the time, I felt I could get away with a bit of retaliation. Obviously, I've elbowed him and he's instantly gone to the floor. Incredibly clever from him, you know, South American, Argentinian international, top tier faggery, which you would accept, they're the masters at. We've seen it with Diego Simeone, with Beckham in the World Cup zone and so forth. They are the masters of getting you off the park and, you know, seeing the linesman flagging. Mike Dean's the ref. I see Mike going towards the linesman. And Bobby Zamora's gone to me, geez, you're going. You're getting sent off. Take one of theirs with you. Try and even the sides up. So at that point, I've thought...
You see, I thought that was the answer. I mean, we were talking earlier about, you know, buying a pen. Yeah. I think that's really cute. But your thinking was, if I kick him and he retaliates, he comes as well.
No, my thinking was, we're in a relegation battle. I've been sent off. God, I've left my teammates down. Is there any way I can do anything to get that disadvantage away from them? And when Bob suggested that, you know, in the cold light of day, you'd go, no, that's not the way to play it. But with, you know, the adrenaline in your system, you go, oh, that's a great idea. So Aguero was, weirdly, Jamie Carragher was doing a book a while back about these kind of biggest games. And he said, well, why did you need Aguero? What had happened was, after that elbow Tevez, Aguero was running to the referee straight away to make him aware, screaming, shouting. So where I'm from, Liverpool, we would say a grass, he's a grass. which means it's somebody who tells the authorities or something that's gone on. So I'd always, when I turned round and Aguero was there, I was like, well, you were grassing. And I thought that might take him out of the game as it transpires, you know, in stoppage time. You know, the moment to live, you know, the dead leg's gone, so I clearly never got him hard enough in the...
it's great. It's amazing. I mean, the things that happen on the pitch that we don't know.
But you know what I found fascinating about that, obviously, because watching that, when you say that, Joey, that you can play against teams, you're right, and you get a sense on the football pitch that this team have gone, or they're really struggling. So in hindsight, I hate to ask you this, in hindsight, do you think if you hadn't got sent off, City would have got over the line, or had they really, really gone?
And I'm still at that thing where you looking in the eyes, I think if we'd have stayed 11-11, I'm not sure they'd have got.
Wow.
I'm not sure they'd have got the win. I'm not sure. Just in terms of, I mean, I always remember, because after I got sent off, I was standing in the kind of corridor as you go down the stairs, so I could, because I was intent on seeing our result, because it was more important for me that QPR stayed up.
Yeah, Bolton
Stoke on the other end of it, and I was just like, God, because I knew if we went down, obviously the book stopped with me, and I was captain, and obviously, so I was like, you know, I've got to live with that for the rest of my days, you know, getting QPR relegated, because regardless of the fact that we had to win at Man City on the last day of the season. Which was, you know, if you'd have wrote that down on paper, it was looking like you were going to get relegated. If you have to go to City, you were champion of left and win a game. And I just remember Mancini's comments on the sideline and the way he was speaking to the players. And I think that ultimately cost him his job the next year. I just remember it going on and the chaos of it all and what he was saying, the abuse he was giving to his own players. And I just remember thinking, God, like, this is what pressure, severe pressure does to people, even the best, you know, in the role I've been in the last couple of years as a manager, seeing a manager unravel like that on the sideline, because they thought he'd thrown it away. For me, it was incredible to see. And as I say, you know, you look back at it, it's on the TV here all the time. And obviously I've got a young lad now who's nine approaching, you know, getting into his football, loving his football. And I have to turn it off to tell him before it gets to that point every time. So Dad, leave that game on. I'm like, no, let's turn that off.
Yeah, he's got a sign.
At some point, I'm going to have to explain to him, like, you don't do that on a football pitch.
He's got a sign on his bedroom door, no dickheads.
thank you. That's right.
Do you want to tell us what happened before we leave you? Why did you quit Fleetwood?
I was sacked at Rich. So it was a strange one in terms of, you know, the team from last season, we'd made some real progress just before the coronavirus kind of kicked in and shut down our fixture program. And I think we're on a 13-game unbeaten run and kind of moving into the top echelons of our division with 9 games to go. So, you know, when you've been involved in promotion chasing team, you know, you get that feel and you feel like you're motivated. And we certainly had that. It then was shut down. We had a period out and we came back for the points per game kind of playoff campaign, which we were caught a little bit cold in. We were a kind of league team and not really a cup team and ended up in a kind of cup format and it didn't go so well in the first leg and we were, you know, didn't get to the final. So it was really disappointing. And then what happens at this level is it's not like, you know, the kind of top level where you get to keep your best players because either your best players are loan players or certainly other clubs come circling and want to take them. And that happened to us. We lost, you know, some key components. I was told any money generated would be given to us to go back in. And that didn't quite play out the next year. You know, just you realize things happen as a young manager. You know, I'm thinking, okay, I was a little bit, we need to get investments and get new players in as soon as we can, bed them in pre-season. We want to hit the ground running. And because we're Fleetwood Town and we get, you know, we don't get the types of investments of some, you know, we've got 8, I think, Premier League clubs in League One or ex-Premier League clubs in League One this year. So you really are David and Goliath in, you know, certainly Fleetwood are in comparison to Sunderland, Ipswich, and, you know, clubs of that ilk. And we needed investment and we needed to get it quick to hit the ground run. Didn't get it. So I had to grind and loan players, young players, and grind ourselves a new team out. And I just felt we were getting into that. I mean, I was 5 unbeaten before or 4 unbeaten in the league before, you know, I get a call from South Africa off the owner and wants to go a different direction with the goalkeeper, wants to go a different direction with some of the younger players. And, you know, I didn't think that was the correct direction to go to get promoted this year. And he did. And ultimately, he owns the football club. So, you know, we had an amicable or as amicable as you can partner ways. We were disappointed because we felt the season doesn't get going for me until January, February. We felt we were jockeying in position again to put Fleetwood in at least playoff kind of promotion contention again on limited resources. So he's obviously your boss and I didn't want to stay and, you know, have players playing for me who I probably don't think should be playing. And I didn't want to have, the kind of thing of, well, I told you so when it goes wrong. So, you know, it's great that you're both on the same thing, a promotion, but it's difficult when people believe it can be done one way and you believe it can be done another way. And you'd have to kind of shake hands, I think, be grown up about it and say, okay, you crack on with that. I've got things I want to be getting on with in terms of education and, you know, grow myself as a football coach and a football person. And I think the best way to do that is an environment where everybody's aligned and everybody, wants the same outcome, but also understands that this is the role we're going to take towards that outcome.
Good. So what you're saying then is you're not done. I mean, I'd hate to think you you'd walk now. It's not enough, is it? One experience.
No, I would never walk from. I'd never walk from a job. It's just sometimes. As I said, you know, owners, especially when the wealthy owners, they've got their way of doing things.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get that, Jeff. No, I suppose what I'm saying is you're not done with it. You want to go back in again.
Oh, yeah. That was the 2.5 years. What it taught me is that I actually really enjoy it. it's something I would like to do as a kind of, you know, for the rest of my life. I didn't know I could coach, and I didn't know I could, I knew I could play because obviously you've done that. But I think once you cross over to the other side, you know, it's not about you. It's about getting people to do things for you or do things, with an intensity because, you know, they respect and you know that you care about them. And I think that's where a lot of, you know, ex-players kind of struggle where, you know, it's easy to tell people what to do. But it's not very easy to get people to do things, for you. And I think that's where the top managers, you know, you have to give them incredible credit, how they get that intensity every single match day. And, you know, I've had a little taste of that, me, Clint and the lads, we've gone from playing to that side of it. And we loved it, loved every single day of it, working with lads. And, as I say, if you can't do it at this moment, then you'd have to get yourself better prepared for the next opportunity. And as soon as it comes, I think we'll be ready and raring to get back.
I always knew I'd never be a coach. My problem always was trying to talk to players that didn't have my ability.
Yeah.
And that's a really frustrating place to be. It really is.
Yeah. You know? I can imagine that's really, really difficult. Yeah.
Yeah, I've never met anyone
I don't have that problem.
I never met anyone who had as little ability as Keezy as well. I know he'd have a problem, Joe. Definitely.
Everyone I've met has more ability than me.
As ever, Joe, really good to talk. Thank you. For taking time out
with us. Listen, great to hear your voice, Joy. Really good. Sounds like you're in good spirits. So it'd be great to see you face to face at some point.
At some point when we can get you in, Joe, get across. But in the meantime, good luck to you. Stay in touch.
Great to hear the voice.
Cheers,
Joe. Best of luck.
Bye.
Bye.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And it's too easy to, from a distance, draw a conclusion or pass verdict on someone, isn't it?
And,
until you get the opportunity to spend time with them. I think he's a great lad. I always have.
I was just going to say, if we'd have had time, I mean, he's one of those, Joey, and we could talk to him for another half hour.
Absolutely.
I mean, do you think he's one of those that his reputation precedes him everywhere he goes?
And I understand that, and he does too, because of the way he used to live his life.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's changed. And he can look back now on what happened with a different view. But I don't think would want, I mean, I kind of got that impression there. Yeah, he would have liked to have been better. Mm-hmm. But as I said, without the hunger and, I mean, look at yourself.
Yeah, yeah. I related a lot to what you were saying about, you know, not having the best talent and having to work really, really hard and give it everything you've got. Yeah, yeah.
And you only get one opportunity.
Yeah, you do.
And that phrase he said, I could smell football. That's the thing I, you know, at a distance now, the smell. I mean, how lucky are you? You go to your workplace, you smell fresh grass every day, and
it's pretty good.
It's
pretty neat. That's pretty neat.
Lovely. Anyway, thanks again to Joey Barton. Thank you for listening. I have mentioned it right at the start of the podcast. Please rate us, subscribe, leave your thoughts. You'll find us on Twitter and Instagram at Keys and Grey Pod. Spell it out, A-N-D, at Keys and Grey Pod. Keep your thoughts coming, please, wherever in the world you are. Mm-hmm. And I am pleased to say, Andrew, that many in far-flung places in the world
Excellent.
Are joining us, which is great. And we shall see you back this same time next week.